You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast, Let's Talk About.
Okay, I believe we are now live. Let's have a little check in the book. Anyone in the house? Can they just say hello if you can see me in here? Well, people are talking. Evening. Mark Nussey said evening. Okay, yeah, we are live. That'll do. If Mark said hello, then I'm happy. Mark, congratulations now. Gary's gift will be in the post, you know, won't it? 10 episodes and you're here for number 10. So looking forward to what Gary is going to send you here. It's very premium. So yeah, make sure you let us know what that is, mate. All right, welcome. Episode 10, here we go. Apologies for being able to see my neck. I know, it's a COVID-19 thing. Oh, I just thought of it. It was a responsible thing because I noticed with the beard, I wasn't able to wear a mask properly. So I thought the only responsible thing to do is to trim it down to wearing the mask end. So that's why I've done it. Brilliant. I come out the hero. I'm obviously feeling a lot better about myself because my guest tonight has bigged me up massively, saying I look much nicer without it. She's really made me feel confident in myself. She's had some lovely analogies and things. So thank you very much for that. And Maria, who will be ringing out shortly. Right. A few hellos to people in the house before I bring out Anne Maria up. Let's get rid of that. Remember, if you would like to see your name appear on the screen, then there is a link in the posts where, in theory, if you press it once and just give permission to the live TV app, then you will be able to appear. So, for example, Scott, it looks like Scott's done that. We see the wonderful picture there. Good evening, all. Hi, Scott. Whereas this person here is just a blank white canvas saying evening. So if that happens, you might be able to see each other in the group. If you want it to be on the screen, then just find that link on my post in the open group and just click it. There you go. Makes sense. It's a live TV thing. It's an issue with Facebook privacy and that. Anyway, right. Let's say thank you, first of all, again to, wow, Paul Coker. What an episode. Anna Maria's got some big shoes to fill tonight. And I'm saying that purely to make her as nervous as possible after her negative comments about my facial hair. So, yeah, in fact, I don't think anyone could be as popular as Paul was last week. I'm glad it's not me as a guest because I'd just be starting on a total impossible task. But anyway, yeah, Paul was amazing. I've never received so many emails and feedback of how wonderful he was. And the biggest feedback was, please make sure that the next guest was as informative and useful to our careers. So there we go. We'll see how we can do. But yeah, Paul was great. It should all be up on YouTube. Let's bring this off here. So yeah, our new YouTube channel, all the episodes are up there. Paul's will be up there by tomorrow. I've sent it off today. But yeah, if you do want to watch them back, then they're all on there. And you can share that as well. It'd be nice. A few people have subscribed, which is nice. Do please click the subscribe button. You've got nothing to lose from it. It's not like you can get any spam because we don't send anything out on it. It just means that rather than people going there and going, oh, they've got 15 people looking at them, it'd be nice if everybody from the SDA open group could actually click it, and then we'll move up to like 1,500 subscribers. So yeah, do us a favor and just click that when you can. Paul Coker, like I said last week on therapistlearning.com, you have got the presentation he did for Therapy Live, which is one of 73 good reasons to spend £50. If you're interested in CPD, then I mean, that is your first port of call, really. It makes sense if you've got 50 quid. As far as value for money, and I'm not just saying I don't get anything out of it, it's just I'm a conduit of good CPD. I like to think so. And this is the number one if you haven't done it yet. Yeah, Paul's is on there. So that's on there. So I would check out if you haven't, Therapist Learning. Also on there is the presentation he did for Run Chat Live 2019, which I do get something out of. So make sure you do spend some extra money. If you want to see him talking about that, then yeah, that's all on there as well. But anyway, that's all thanks to Paul. Really sincere thanks to Paul last week. He is going to come back. We're going to home in on one of the many things he started talking about. If you're welcome to give us some suggestions and let us know if there's something in particular you'd like to hear Paul go into more detail on. But I'm joking, of course, because tonight we have an absolute giant of the industry as well. She's going to be talking about the subjective assessment, which is a fantastic, very close to my heart. So if you've got any questions, as always, bring them up. If you've had any experiences or you've learned anything new or you've got any questions about how to put anything we talk about into place, then do feel free to use that comments section. Gary's in the house as well. So if we've got any technical questions or anything, then Gary, you'll be able to step in. Hi, Gary. Glad you're here. Hopefully I missed the Matt banging on about giving out free stuff. You did, Gary, but obviously your prize for Mark has to be in the post by midnight tonight. Oh, Scott, thank you, mate. See, this is why blokes stick together. That's what I wanted Anna to say to me. I feel your beard paid. Thanks, mate. Solidarity. I appreciate that, mate. Fortunately, you'll grow back and men get better looking when they get older. I'll say so more. So it's, you know, fortunately, I've got all the best to look forward to. Four words, Sean Connery, Doc Cotton. There we go. I'll say no more. Anyway, on that note, I don't know where that came from. That sounded quite... Obviously, I'm cut up inside. Right. On that note, I will bring up the magnificent, the marvellous Anna Maria Mazzieri. Here she is.
Good evening.
Buonasera. How are you?
Molto bene. You and your beard. Good evening.
Oh, no. We don't want to spend any more time talking about it. I'm sorry. No, I've let you down. Let you down. I'm sorry. But hopefully we can get by it. Thank you very much for joining us. You've been here a few times, lending us your fantastic experience via the comment section. So it's really great to have you in person.
Thank you for asking. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. I'm very excited because there's so much. I mean, let's just get rid of the elephant in the room. How long have you been doing this?
Did it all start? I qualified in 2001, so probably as long as you, Matt.
Yeah. As long as you. You must have started when you were very young. Oh. I know. Pretty good, eh? Married man, I've got all the lines.
Your beard is not great. I was very young when I started.
2001. And that was in Exmouth. So my biggest question for you is, how did a red-blooded Italian woman end up in Exmouth? How did that happen?
I came to England to go to university. My background is actually archaeology, Egyptology to be precise. Ah. And I was in London attending UCL, and then I met my husband. I left London, and my husband is from Exmouth. We went traveling. When we came back, we settled in Exmouth, wherever else in the world. You know, Exmouth is fantastic. Devon is superb. Very, very similar to my Italian landscape. And I love the people. I love the locals. And so that's why we stayed here. And that's where I did the first massage course, which was a very simple, basic, I think it was an high-tech level 3 holistic massage. Bakelong was called holistic massage. And then I started from there and progressing through to different levels. And I did the BTEC level 5 with the ISRM. And then I went to do my degree in sports therapy and margin so that I can progress to go into my master's.
Fantastic.
So here I am.
And you haven't looked back?
Not for the weather. I didn't come here for the weather. That's absolutely for sure.
No. Mind you, I'm living in Lansing.
Oh, I cannot hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, I cannot hear you.
Really? Can anyone else in the room hear me? Or is it me? Have I done something wrong?
Definitely cannot hear you.
Okay, let's see. If anyone else in the room can hear me, can you write something in the comments section? Can you hear me now?
Nope.
I can hear you. I can hear you. Let me just check if anybody
else. Is that me? Oh.
All okay here. Can hear both.
I cannot hear Matt.
Okay, so maybe I'm going to throw you out and put you back in again. Let me just tell Alan.
I cannot hear Matt.
I'm going to throw you out so you can...
Can you all hear us? For some kind of reason, I'm just going to...
Right, I'm going to throw Anna out and then see if she logs in again. Let's get rid of that. Move. There we go. We'll see what happens. Technical problems. What can we do? It's live. So but let me just check. People could hear me and yeah, you could hear us both. Send Anna back to the waiting room, then come back in. Yeah. Hopefully she'll be back soon. Okay, right. So in preparation for when Anna does come back, I will call it Anna. Technically it's Anna Maria, but when she does come back in full glory, I want you all to cast your minds back to when you first learned, I suppose for most of you, it was kind of level three, when you first learned your how to assess the ingredients of an assessment. Was there a particular acronym or something you used? I want to see how many people come up with the same word. I'm pretty sure it will be the same word. But if you, yeah, cast one back to level three or something, what were the kind of group of letters, you know what acronym is, which reminded you the different parts of starting from when they walk through that door to when they walk out that door? What did you learn? Type it in the comments section if you'd be so kind. It'll also make me realize that I'm still talking to somebody. Here we go. They started coming in. Anna hasn't returned yet. Okay. Well, anyway, soap. Exactly. That's what I was looking for. So we've got a couple of people here coming in with soap. We've got another one else with soap. Sharon's come in with soap. 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 Cool. Now, I reckon, personally, I'm pretty sure I remember back in probably 2000 and about 2002 or three. I did my first level and yeah, it was soap as well. I think soap has been around since the beginning. So obviously we've got our subjective objective. Oh, let's bring her in. How's that now?
I can hear you. What was that?
I don't know. Everyone could hear me. Everyone could hear you.
But I could not hear you at all. It's always, so those Italians, honestly, we come in and we're just upset. Apologies, everybody. Okay, let's start again. Okay.
So that's okay. These things
happen. Let's go into it.
So basically, apologies. I've asked people what acronym they had when they were introduced, kind of the ingredients, what to do when someone walks in the door until when they walk out the door. And everyone's come up with soap. Apart from Gary, who's come up for some reason with the word kingdom. I'm not sure where he learned. I don't even know what okay. K-I-N-G-D-O-M stands for. But yes, so was it soap when you passed level three in 2001? Was it soap as well?
When I did the other courses, yes, not in 2001, but soap has been around.
It's been around for a few years, hasn't it?
Yes, it's been around for a few years. And it is certainly useful because you can give yourself a structured approach during your assessment of a client so that you can start building your hypothesis with a subjective. You can then test that hypothesis with the objective and you can kind of analyze what the problem is and then provide a plan. But also SOAP is useful because it gives everybody a standard language so that we can speak with our colleagues, physios, osteos, chiros, and so on. So it's definitely as its uses. And however, I would say that more often than not, I found over my practice and also as an educator that we do not tend to put enough importance into the S part of the SOAP. Yeah. Which is the subjective part of it. We all very, very keen. We are all very quick to respond to biomechanical cues and ask about biomechanical cues and know enough about subjective and spending enough time over the subjective. And that's something that very much we try to teach to our students is about to collate those information through the very important information through the subjective, especially now as therapists, I think we really got the grasp of pain science. As modern therapists, we really got the grasp of pain science and the application of the biopsychosocial model. However, often I'm not sure, I'm not convinced that we can translate and funnel the understanding of pain science and biopsychosocial model. I don't know if we're channeling enough or efficiently into our clinical practice. And for me, one of the first steps, especially as manual therapists, which we spend a good amount of time with our clients, for me, subjective assessment is one of the most important tools to understand our clients. The key message that pain science and the biopsychosocial model is teaching us is that the client pain and the way they respond to the pain or their injury, I'm not only talking about persistent pain, I'm talking about even acute injuries. The way each client respond and perceive that or experience, sorry, better use word, experience that, it's very individual. So pain science and BPS is telling us about the individuality of the client. But we are still, as practitioners, we seem to be more interested in assessing the injury instead of assessing the way an injury or the pain or pain it's affecting, interfering with the client. Craig Leibson, who I'm a big fan of his work, he said, let's profile the client and not just the injury. And this is really important. When a client comes to us, we need to try to find, we need to translate our approach to be a client-centered approach. This is what the PPS, BPS, and pain science is also telling us. How can we individualize the treatment if we look only at the injury? So during the subjective is the time when we can collate all those informations, but also we can, most importantly, we can collate the informations that are meaningful to the clients and not to us as a therapist. Because this is another thing that we need to be, and stop me if...
beautiful.
I'm waffling, okay?
No, not at all.
And you can, hello, husband number two. My husband number two is in the house. Matt, you can switch me off anytime, okay?
I'm glad you put it that way around. I'm glad you didn't say the opposite.
So when the client comes to us, often we seem to be looking for problems. Matt Lowe in a webinar, he said, it's another one that his work is amazing. He said, we as therapists, we are problem solvers. So when we have somebody in front of us, we are trying to look for problems. Sometimes problems that are actually not there. So are we actually creating a problem? So we need to start switching from a therapy-centered approach to a client-centered approach. And that's where, for me, the subjective is paramount, because the information you try to gather with it, the way the client per se writes it down, what we always do, we always, in our clinic, we give our clients the form in advance by email or before they come in and see us. We ask them to come in 10 minutes early, they wait at the reception and they write. Because we want to see what type of language they use. We want to understand through certain specific questioning and interviewing how the particular problem, the particular pain is affecting them, is affecting the quality of life. What are they expecting? And that is very important. One, because the client then feels validated. The clients come to us and finally there is somebody there wanting to know all of this. They don't want to rush them. And then once they come in and we start, we go through again the form and we actually ask them again. That is another confirmation, consolidation, and give validity to the pain, because that's what they want. They want validity. Before they can move on, they want somebody to say, yes, finally, somebody can see that I am in pain, that I am suffering.
Okay.
Sorry. Yes.
No, that's fine. It's beautiful. Yeah. Every time I'm going to butt in, I get some hands coming towards me. And I'm like, whoa. No, it's fantastic. Now, what I'm interested in is especially after last week's, I noticed when people were listening to Paul and the way they were reacting to what he was saying, which is all very much about the sensory nature and everything and involving the nervous system, which is essentially what we're talking about. I think a lot of the people in here are on this page already.
I agree, 100%.
But it was interesting because what we said off air when we were talking on Facebook or something was, and I'd like to discuss this with you now, certain factors I think interrupt all the good intention we've got. A lot of the people in here are learned and they've watched Mosley, they've read Butler and all the more contemporary stuff they're reading as well. But when that client walks through that door, something happens. Maybe it's instigated by the client, or maybe it's instigated by some other fact, which maybe you can come up with and we'll talk about, where all of the BPS model and all of our good intentions to sit down and listen to the client and have a great subjective stops. And before we know it, we're doing a draw test or something.
Absolutely. And
what do you think the factors are? What causes it?
Several things. First of all, for me, it's really, really important that the therapist understands first that the subjective has to be given as much as the objective. We don't say objective is not important. Objective is very important. But subjective now needs to be given as much important, because that helps us to identify the psychosocial factors which are affecting the pain. We all come from a mechanic, at least I come from a mechanically structured, biomechanically educated approach until probably 7 to 8 years ago. So for me, it was so much easier, for some of us, it was so much easier to revert to what we knew best. I didn't understand back along the importance of pain education, the importance of subjective or motivational interviewing. So it's easy to revert to what we know best. So every client, you kind of have to really remind yourself and focus before the client comes in to say, okay, now I'm going to prepare myself. And the other aspect for me that is really, really important is the way you set up your room. And that's why COVID has been an excellent opportunity for us. If my room is set up in a way that the massage couch is in the middle of the room, nicely well dressed up and everything, when the client comes in, the first expectation is, I'm coming in to receive that treatment, to receive the manual treatment, which for some situations, this is exactly what the clients need. If we start instead, maybe change the way the room looks like, maybe we push the couch a little bit away from the center, and the first thing they see is two chairs coming together so that you're facing each other, you're already stimulating the expectation that there's going to be some discussion. If you as a therapist show that you put enough importance to that discussion, the client will feel that. And how we put important to the discussion, it's we must listen. There was a research done in America in 2000, I don't remember exactly when, forgive me. But they found that American GPs, they stop their patient within 11 seconds of their starting the first sentence. In England, we are a little bit better. I think the average is 25 to 40. But what they found, that if you actually do not stop the patient, or in our case, the clients, talking about their issues, and you let them talk for at least 90 seconds, in that initial 90 seconds, they're already able to tell you the most important part, that what is most important for them. And that is found, actually, shortens the consultation times. Because what is really stopping us? How many of us, and I used to be one of those, how many of us actually used to think, oh my God, the client is talking and you're looking at your watch and think, oh my God, it's just been in 10 minutes. We need to get now into the couch. Why? Because we always thought that the couch part, the objective part, the treatment part was the most important, or what was giving us the positive outcome. Is it? Because now we know that's actually what gives us a better outcome, the optimal adherence, is therapeutic relationship.
This is a great point. I'm going to stop you there because I'm hoping that for some people in the room, you're now thinking about how your clinic is set up. I really want to try. I'm treating everybody in the room today with the utmost respect.
Indeed. Yes.
No, but in the sense that I'm going to presume that they know all about BPS. They know that the subject is really important. But deep down, I reckon they also know that a lot of the time, probably the majority of the time, like you said, within 5 minutes, they're looking at their watch. Gary's brought up a good point here. Do we subconsciously subscribe to what we perceive to be the client expectation? That happens quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yes.
So maybe it's the client. The client is letting off sometimes body language that they didn't come here to talk, that they are looking at the couch or they come in. So how do we, is it something we have to do to prepare the client so they know that they're not just going to come in for a rub down, we're actually going to listen to them and talk it through?
First of all, I'll stop you there. Did you just say rub down in front of me?
Yeah.
All those people there that they know me, they know already where my blood pressure is.
No, but a lot of the clients think they're coming in for a rub down. They think that the rub down, and the reason why I diminuize, is that a word? The reason why I diminuate it into rub down is because that's what the client thinks is going to cure it, just a rub.
Yeah. So what Gary said is absolutely spot on. That's why it is our responsibility. What do people think about our industry? What do people think we provide? Only manual therapy. If every single person there, do you really think that those clients get better because of the manual therapy or because it's you providing the manual therapy? So it's you as a person, it's your approach, it's your attitude, it's your motivation, is your being, the relationship with the client that makes them better. So, and the other thing that I think it is our responsibility. We cannot expect, like we did COVID, they said, but the government and here. We have to take the responsibility for ourselves to educate the community, to show them what we do in our marketing material, make your pain management, your pain education part of your marketing material. The other thing that when you asked Anna Maria, what should we do also? For me, this COVID, although I was doing it before, this COVID is really highlighted how important are online consultations. So I was doing them before for different reasons, because people coming from away or just to keep with people in contact. But actually, they should be part of normal service, because when you are on a Zoom call, there is not that expectation of the manual treatment. There is that client is there fully engaged and buying in already on the fact that it's not expecting anybody to fix him or fix her. They're going to be talking, listening, and so on. And that's where self-efficacy. Right. Is that proper English? That's where self-efficacy is important. That's where it comes from.
So you mentioned maybe put something on your website, start educating the client to know what to expect before they come in.
Absolutely.
Is there any other tips? Because I think what Gary said, I think that is one of the problems. where a good therapist has all the great intentions, but they can see the client feels they're losing out. What else can you do to pre-prepare that client?
So this is where I send my consultation form online, because I use my consultation form, which contains all the biomechanical aspects as well as all the pain questions, all the mood questions, sleep, anything that influences the lifestyle that might be influencing the experience, because I want them to start themselves reading it, accepting it, starting connecting it already into the brain, so that by the time they come to me, their conversation becomes so much easier because they're already starting thinking it. But also, one of the most important questions for me is, what do you expect from our session, and what are your expectations for the long term? Where would you want to be, and what do you think coming to sessions with me will help you? Because most of the time they will say, I want you to remove me from pain, and most of the time I say to them, I will not achieve that, but I can facilitate and work together with you to find the way in which you can manage the pain, you can manage your injury, you can become stronger. So most of the time, is for me, it gives me, it is the cue to start, is the question to start telling them, it's not about me, it's about your client.
Okay, so I like that. So maybe that's one of the things that's coming out of COVID-19, like you say, getting the client used to filling out consultation form online.
And doing the online consultation, actually getting them to do an online, because at the moment, because the government is, in order to diminish the risk, we need to keep as little time as possible with our client. Mm. Then we need to do a kind of a triage and a consultation online through whichever means, as long as it's video. So that is already giving us the opportunity and for the client to start learning that that part of their treatment is always about us. If we give the treatment the most important, then they will never think that the subjective or the talking part of it is important. And why they need to understand that is the most important. So if a client talks with me for 45 minutes and I don't have time to do treatment because I got a client in 15 minutes, I say to them, we'll come back again for the treatment. Because we make them understand that was an intervention per se. I always say to my students, subjective can be an intervention per se.
That's good. Yeah. I suppose it's really important as well. I know that I've, in my earlier days in particular, lost clients or caused clients to complain because I didn't make it clear at the beginning that this talk was actually part of the intervention. And we've already started potentially solving the problem by having this conversation. And I'm sure you know students, and probably yourself in the earlier days, have lost clients because you didn't make that clear. But if they're happy with that and they understand at the beginning, you might say it might actually turn out we're going to spend today talking about this and getting through this case history, because you've given me all the case history, we've ruled out red flags, but there's something here which isn't quite fitting right, and we need to talk about it more before we start doing some treatment. If they buy into that, beautiful. But I think it's important to get that confirmation from them, isn't it? Otherwise, 100%. It can all go wrong. Yeah.
Informed consent is important. So if we talk really clinically, if the client comes to you because you advertise for massage, because the client wants the manual treatment, whatever manual treatment is, you need to make sure that you make that very, very clear. So when they call, we say our first appointment pre-COVID, it would have been our first appointment is 75 minutes. We're going to go through a thorough consultation. And if we have time, we'll do some treatment, will be part of it. So they will know it immediately.
How much do you think, does it depend on it? Like if you are only really at the level where you're offering massage, then you haven't got so many tools in the sense that you're not going to be in a position where you're going to give them something else. Then maybe the subjective is going to be shorter, no? Because it's not
Why?
Like you can...
What I would say, subjective can be part of the massage. So if your tools are massage for relaxation, which it for me is really important, massage for releasing tension, so your subjective, it should be still important because it's actually gives the idea how the person responds to the stress. It's why the person is, because you can then discuss with the person, actually, look, you're not sleeping very well. We know the sleep is dramatically associated with increased pain. So instead of you coming every week for the massage, actually, we can start looking a little bit of about the sleep. So subjective does not mean that you have to be a level 5, level 4, level 3. Subjective is your starting gathering the information, whatever information it is, as complex or as basic, whatever information it is about the client. So it is a client-centered approach.
But we're really going to have to improve somehow the information they're taught on level 3, because level 3 post-consultation is, oh, make sure you drink lots of water because there's going to be lots of toxins floating around your body, and if you hurt tomorrow, it's normal. Boom, thank you, goodbye.
Yes. You know,
there's no more information. And that's not the student's fault. There's nothing else that's given.
So, Matt, it takes one research paper said it takes 17 years for 14% of research to filter to clinical practice. So it will take a long time for syllabus to change. So I'm very glad to see that things are changing, but not fast enough. That's why me and my colleagues, Matt, my second husband, Matt and Becky, we created something called the Massage Collective for those level 3 practitioners to help them through that change of paradigm and their understanding of what massage does and what it does not. Because massage is very good. Even just the what we used to call holistic massage is very effective if framed within the right narrative. Because when we were discussed, like I loved last week with Paul Cocker, we're talking about dependency. Is that the technique that makes you dependent? Or is that the therapist that makes you dependent? That's why subjective is really important, because through subjective, you can really start listening to your client and making them self-efficient. You can use as much active intervention as you want. If you are a dependency creator, that client will go away dependent from you, even if you just provide exercise. So for me, it's very much the therapist. So levels do not come into place. Obviously, you learn the subjective at the level 3, and then, you know, a layered level.
Yeah. I think that whole 17 years for it to get through to clinical door, I wonder.
It's interesting, isn't it?
That's interesting, but I mean, does that take the internet into account? Does that take the information that we can learn now? And so I wonder if there's other powers that be that are holding back. Sure. There's big organizations who put out the same paper for 10 years because it's easier to get it marked. It's easier to, and I see them as working in the industry as a stumbling block. They're just not updating their exam questions, are they?
True, but it's also true because we are very, very involved with it, because we are changing our syllabus all the time. It takes a long time for the awarding body, in our case BTEC, to actually change even, you know, a question into a crypt.
Even a question that's wrong.
So it takes a long time. So however, the change has to happen. That's why we got this massage collective. We feel that the change needs to happen at ground level. If each of us, in a compassionate way, we can educate each other and having places like the STA forums and the STA close groups where we can all talk. And in fact, at SIF as well, I will put SIF and ISRM forums where you can talk without anybody shutting you up, or anybody looking down on you, because we all been, some of you just qualified, you've not been there, but most of us who qualified a long time ago, we all been there. We all have been there. We all been where we thought one thing, and then all of a sudden we have to change because evidence told us so. So we didn't know then, but we know now, and we ought to do better.
Very interesting. Right, some great points. Let's have a little turn to the room. Let's have a look. We're there. Mark amplified exactly what you said, actually. In fact, it's pretty much word for word. One of my questions is, what is your expectation of today's treatment? Yeah, it's a hugely important question, isn't it? And we've talked about
what's your expectation of today's treatment? Yeah.
And also another big one is, what do you think is wrong with you? I mean, that's the other huge one as well. That opens the door, doesn't it, to what's their preoccupations and their worries. And yeah, go on.
Cool. So my expectation of today's treatment, I love the question. Superb, in fact. It should be my expectation or my client expectation. So I could have a client coming to me that due to their, that they might be, let's say, persistent pain sufferer, and in that particular time, in that particular day, the best therapeutic approach will be a relaxing massage, because the anxiety levels are very high, and the only way I can communicate what I want to communicate is by through down regulating the central nervous system and changing some of the beliefs and so on. Maybe another one will be just coming in and provide some simple advice on how to progress from stage two to stage three or rehab, or if they're ready to return to play. Or it could be treatment to help with shoulder pain. Mm-hmm. So it's according to the client, but we have, I love people think, so, you know, tools in the box are not useful. For me as a manual therapy, tools in the box are very useful, because as long as my outcome has always to be to increase self-efficacy for the client, mm-hmm. so that the client can go and be active. So my passive treatment, and for me, there is no a negative thing to say that I give passive treatment. I'm not ashamed. My passive treatment, they have a very active long-term outcome, mm-hmm. because the clients that come to me, and I argue to us as manual therapists, are clients that they didn't respond very well to just active. So one of the important questions that I ask is, what other treatments have you had?
Very true.
What other advice have you received? What have you done to self-help yourself? And how have they worked? So it really gives me what biases the client is coming to me with. And most of the time, it's people that they haven't had a good relationship with certain type of approaches, to which then what I'm good at is what I do, is using manual therapy for a long-term positive outcome. But my outcome is always a active outcome, and it's always a high-value active care, and never come back to treatment because you need it. Some of my clients come repeat, they continue coming for a while, mm-hmm. but not because they have to, because unless they get treated by me, they get injured. They come because they choose, because they want to. It's their choice. And why? Because they say, I enjoy the experience. They don't have the pain anymore. Their back is strong, but they enjoy the experience. And the experience of my treatment could be moving in a little different way, changing some exercise routine, or manual treatment.
Definitely. There's a lot of comments,
Matt,
going on here.
Matt, I've lost you again.
Oh, you can't hear me anymore?
Yeah, I cannot hear you again.
So I can say whatever I want about you and you can't understand.
I don't know why.
Fantastic. Right, let's really talk about Anna. No, maybe you need to leave and come back in again.
I come out and go in again.
Okay.
I come out and go in again.
We lost her again, bless her. I don't know what's going on there. It's not like she's even speaking from Italy. Anyway, some great points coming about subjective assessment. It's tricky. I'm trying to read. There's some great comments coming in here as well. I mean, I'm really interested in there's... Oh, she's back again. There we go. You're back. Can you hear us?
I bet. I
don't know what it is. It's weird. I don't know.
It's really, really, really weird. Somebody said about placebo.
What, the placebo?
Yes. Ryan says,
placebos do have a legitimate place in therapy. Yeah, I mean, it's even a question whether we call it placebos anymore. It's such a negative connotation, isn't it, placebo? I don't know about you, but I definitely find that you can move forwards more if you change placebo with just context. I mean, it just solves all the problems, isn't it? Because you shouldn't even use the word placebo, because a placebo, and this really gets on my nerves a little bit, a placebo is something that we know doesn't work. It's inert. It's a sugar pill. And it's used to prove that something does work. So as soon as you say placebo, you're saying it's something which is innate and doesn't do anything. So that's not what's happening in therapy. If we know that the outcome is better if the client feels more relaxed and they're trusting and then they believe in you, then that's not placebo at all.
Absolutely. And this is exactly what Matt Scarsbrook did on his fantastic talk for Therapy Live. If you listen to it, shall we ask a different question? So instead of focusing too much to try to prove the mechanics, do we really need to? Or shall we try to ask ourselves why people feel better? Could it be that why they feel better is very different to what we thought? It's not because we improve circulation. It's not because we break down scar tissue, because we don't. But maybe there is something psychological. Well, no, maybe we know, actually. That is more towards our psychology and emotional well-being. And actually, we need to be okay with that. I personally am very okay with that.
It's something which I think has been delayed because of using the word placebo.
Yes,
if we'd got rid of that word a long time ago and started using it. Because like you say about the research, people have been going on about, what was his name? There was a British physician, GP, Thomas, I think it was, from 78. He had about three papers back in 1978 talking about, does it matter if we're positive in a consultation? Is client expectation important? And all the research was there. And obviously now we turn and go, yeah. And this was like 40 years ago. And yeah, still only now we're thinking, we're still asking questions like, well, is placebo important? Or
yeah, Matt, it's really interesting you say that, because, you know, how many papers or how much research there was telling us that we were in the wrong pathway and we didn't listen to it. Why? So how many, even with a biologically implausible, understanding we have of anatomy, why? I sometimes I'm puzzled how blinkered I was.
Must be something to do with human nature, or just the nature of the beast of the industry or something.
100%.
Because we're very, very quick to jump on board if there's suddenly a new manual technique which everyone needs to learn. If they give it an acronym, this is like GTT, you need to learn it now, or get your client better. Everybody's forking out thousands of pounds. So sometimes we're really keen to listen. I think it's just advertising, isn't it? It's marketing, advertising, and there's some very powerful triggers which help us spend our money on anything, like £2.60 for just a cortada or a latte, you know, when really it costs £1 to make. Yeah, I'll have another one, please. Thanks very much. We buy into it, you know.
This is the other thing. Sometimes people criticize. They said, having a relaxing massage is ever so expensive while you can, you know, go for a walk. I said, it's okay. As long as the client knows that. Let's not be patronizing with our clients. Mm. So as long as I say to my clients, look, let's say that they want a massage just per se. So the therapist, in my opinion, they should say, knowing that you can go for a walk or having a bath or relax in a home, that will do the same physiological effects than a massage. As long as they know that, then if they choose to say, actually, I prefer spending my £60 and can come to have a massage, then that's okay.
Yeah.
As long as the client knows about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't whinge and complain after a month saying, I've seen you 8 times and I'm still no better. Well,
oh, that's different. Different, Matt. That we are discussing pain treatment is different from just receiving a massage for, let's call it, as an experience. Mm. So when there is pain, there should be the beginning treatment and should be an end. Absolutely. And if the end means that the client is not achieved the outcomes, then it's your responsibility, professional, ethical and moral, to forward them to a colleague that might have different skill set. If somebody says, I have got no pain anymore, but I still want to come to you for the experience.
Yeah.
If you're okay to provide that, yeah, and they're okay. Yeah.
I think we are very much molded by the clients coming through the door, and they can change us very quickly because essentially they're paying us. So we feel indebted to them. We need to give them what they want. I think that's where a lot of the time everything goes wrong.
Spot on, Matt. You know, spot
I think
on.
That's the problem.
Spot on.
That's okay. No, because I'm just looking at the time. Oh. So what I want is, because we're talking about subjective assessment, everyone in the room now, even if they weren't before, they definitely are now convinced that, obviously depending on the client, but for a lot of clients, we need to, one, try and pre-prepare them so they know that the chat at the beginning is important. It's not just to get their name down and check that they haven't got something really serious going on. That's important, but
you've got
to
be a good clinician.
Yeah,
you've
definitely
got to pick up the red flags. You've got to pick it up.
What other tips can you use to try? Because essentially what we're talking about is the whole kind of idea of let the client speak and they'll tell you what the problem is. That's the best way to diagnose anything. Just open the doors and allow that client to have the confidence, which is sometimes tricky and won't happen first time. Maybe you have to see them four or five times until they actually open up, and that's normally when they start crying and it kind of gets a bit tense, but that's when the door opens up. What are some of your top tips then for encouraging an effective subjective assessment where the client is going to actually feel happy and start talking to you and give you that information which you need to therefore give a good treatment?
So first of all, what you write down onto your information, the way you provide your questions. So every question should be, how do you feel, or how do you? So it has to be client-centered.
Okay.
Then when they come in and you start discussing it and you go through it verbally, one skill that I learned ages ago in a motivation interview in a course was that if there is that pause between sentences when your client talks, how often we actually try to go in? In fact, if you're like me, what I do, I wait for people to stop talking. I don't even wait for people to stop talking. I don't go on top of them. So I have to refrain myself. But for that, when there is...
Oh, she's gone again. That wasn't me. I didn't chuck her out, honestly. Oh, damn it. She's got so much good stuff to say. I'm not sure what's going on. But yeah, tips. So the first tip she gave was, open-ended questions. Sometimes it's really important just the type of questions you use to give the... Oh, she's back again. There we are. Oh, no, she's gone again. Open-ended questions. It is a skill which, one, isn't always taught and probably is hardly ever taught on during your certification in some kind of clinical qualification. You're not taught how to interview. You're not taught how to use open-ended questions. I'm scared to invite her back up again now because she's going to get thrown out. She's going to think it's me. You okay?
Did you just throw me out?
No, it wasn't me. Honestly, I put my hands up here. I said, no, it's not me.
I'm sorry.
So I was just saying that what you've just said, like using open-ended questions, I mean, I always believe that one of the blessings I had in being an effective therapist was learning how to teach English. Because when I did my TEFL course way, way back in the 90s, when you're teaching a language, it's all about eliciting the answer. It's all about limiting teacher talking time and maximizing student talking time. It's one of the basic things you learn. And I always find that that gave me a head start, because what you've just said, being able to sit back and just enjoy the silence and allow whether they're learning English, or whether they're explaining their experience, to bring it out in their own words and not rushing them.
And also there is the space, they psychologically will have the need to feel it. So they're going to continue talking. And then show a little, show empathy, show reaffirmation, validate their answer by saying, oh, I understand. Oh, sorry. That sounds like it's been a really, really difficult time for you. Tell me more about it. And also, note, don't provide them, don't put your words in their mouth.
Brilliant.
Listen to the type of language they're going to be using. Is it catastrophizing language? Can you unravel their language and start using a bit more positive connotations in your language, which is going to start regrooving a better positive pathway in the thinking process?
Where do you get these skills you're talking about are so important, and I take it for granted, maybe because I've learned it from teaching English, or maybe I just learned it, maybe I'm just born with it or whatever, but I know the skills you're a lot of people can't do that in a normal conversation. You know, the sort of people you're talking to. What did you do today? Oh, I went to, and they're already thinking about what they're going to say to you. A lot of people don't have this skill of interviewing.
Yeah, Matt.
Naturally. So where'd you get it from?
So two or three places, actually. As you've been a tutor, you learn about student needs much more than we ever learn about client needs. Our needs analysis with clients should be like a tutor analysis, because when we teach, we need to assess each individual pupil learning needs. Secondly, if you are a parent, you know that everything you say to your children, they will have an effect to the way they perceive the world, the way they will see it in the future. So you're very careful of the language they use. And plus, motivation. There is a fantastic book, Motivational Interviewing, Roddick. I recommend it. It's amazing. But these skills are very easily found, all over. So if you research motivational interviewing.
I think it's a big one. I think it's where a lot of therapists slip up, and probably they're doing all this. What's going wrong? Why is my business not surviving? And they just don't know yet that maybe there should be more mentoring. That's what mentoring should be about, where somebody comes to you, there is your patient, and you treat them as if you're treating someone else, and then they can give you that feedback, you know?
Yeah. Another thing that students or therapists like says, oh, but I am not a counselor. I should, no. You don't have to be a counselor. You're not, in fact, you do not give advice on anxiety and depression. What you can do, though, you give advice to what you know. So if a client comes to you catastrophizing about their back pain, our intervention would be to make them feel safe moving. So, but if you pick up that they are suffering with depression, if you pick up that they are lacking the right support, that you can advise them to seek further help and put them towards the right road. So you don't need to advise on people within the mental health, because it's not your scope of practice. But you can use your scope of you can use those skills within your scope of practice.
Definitely. And that's probably a big thing as well, is the bigger the circle of referrals you have, the more you'll learn. I mean, you grew up in a multidisciplinary clinic, didn't you? You started off in a chiropractor, wasn't you?
Yes,
indeed. So that probably gave you a lot of those skills as well, you know, being able to chat with people from different angles.
It's the best thing that it could have happened to me, because I never worked independently.
Yeah.
And I don't understand what independent one-person work is. It's
pretty tricky, isn't it? I wonder how many people in the room actually have worked in a team or started off in a little room in a gym and really don't talk to many other therapists apart from online. But it's definitely a lot of pros, isn't there, of being able to close the door and quickly talk to a physio and osteo or chiropractor and go, I've got to have a look at these notes, and vice versa. You know, it's a great way of learning.
Yeah. But also, therapists, see, and Matt, stop me, okay, because I
couldn't continue. No, that's fine.
Also, we find that therapists often, when they go for their CPD needs, and because there is so much great CPDs out there, and some less great, let's say, but what they tend to do, they tend to think that just adding on manual skills or the dry needling, the cupping, the taping, which is all great, okay? They have their place. But they view that as higher value than actually learning language, learning those softer skills, which actually evidence is showing us they're the most important. Specificity of techniques is not what achieves great outcome. Therapeutic relationship does.
Very true. That should be a t-shirt if I heard one. Great. Definitely. You have to start molding those. That'd be great.
Sense of humor is so...
Well, no, I'm just saying that would be a great t-shirt. I'd buy it.
I'd buy you one.
Like that. Okay, so let's conclude then. Let's try and sum things up to get some clinical gold, some pearls of wisdom. So we've talked about the things I'm going to take away from you today is definitely don't see the subjective as just a little starter which you play around with a kind of just your hands until you go onto the main course. If anything, I mean, you said it's one of the most important tools. I would probably go on paper saying it's the most important tool, because until you know the person in front of you, everything else could just go out.
Profile the client, not only the injury. Exactly. 100%, 100%. Because then you'll know exactly how the person respond. You'll know if they respond better by receiving a massage, so when you can do pain education when they receive a massage, or they respond better while you take them down to the field to do some running drills.
Yeah.
You'll know how the best respond to what you want to communicate, because ultimately, pain education and movement is what you want to communicate to them. Mm-hmm. How you provide that is within your skills. God, my hair is a mess.
That's fantastic. It looks great. Much better than my lack of hair.
Yeah, I was going to say, but that's...
The other thing which I think I picked up on, which I totally agree with, and I think is a good point to remind people, is, every time that person comes through the door, you've got to take a deep breath and just go, I know nothing about this person. I don't know what is wrong with them. I'm going to have a series of hypotheses now. Thanks to talking to them, I'm going to build these hypotheses up. And then the objective actually serves to test those hypotheses. Never go into an objective looking for what's wrong with that person.
Yes.
The objective is a bit like a scan. It's where you're suggesting these things, you're thinking this, and then you do the test to see whether it fits in with your hypotheses.
Correct.
I think that's something that always makes me laugh. And I'll tell you what, it happened to me a long time ago. Quite well-known experienced therapists still turn around and they'll say, I'm studying research in this blah 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 fascial thing at the moment. What are the chances that the last two patients I've had come through the door had exactly what I'm studying?
Bias to what?
Here we go. The confirmation bias is huge. What are the chances? Well, very, very high, because you're looking for that straight away.
This is exactly what Matt Law said. We are problem solvers, and often we will find the problem where there is no problem to find.
Exactly, because we're looking for it. And I think
sure
people in the room,
how
many people in the room actually can think back maybe to just a few months ago where they came out from a course and they were thrilled on Monday when the first two people who walked through the door had exactly what that learned on the course. It's amazing. Yeah. And the courses, they sell them knowing that. They'll say, you ever look next week and you see how many people come through the door have got exactly what we were looking for? Well, of course they have, because that is the danger of running too quickly to the objective.
Yes.
With objective assessment,
correct,
you'll find exactly what you're looking for. If you're just break test and looking for retrofemoral version, you'll find it, because even though it comes there, you'll go, oh yeah, that's it. You'll find what you want.
Because it's not client-centered, it's injury-centered. And of course, of course you will find a lack of rotation. Of course you will find, but is that what really causes the pain?
Exactly.
Or causes the lack of function?
Doesn't matter anymore. You found what you thought it was, and you are exactly.
Even Jeremy Lewis in one of his amazing papers, as one of his, and he was saying, do we really need to diagnose anymore? Do we need to diagnose, give a name to the diagnosis, so we can just call it shoulder pain? Yeah, because are we working with an injury? Are we working with an injured joint? We're working with a person who is suffering with shoulder pain or is having a shoulder injury. But we're working with the person. So profile the person and not only the injury.
Exactly.
Esattamente.
Exactamente.
Bravo.
And then, the other thing was just maybe if you find you are jumping in when there's silence, or you, the conversation's not working, or the client is just looking at you, just kind of closed and not really answering any questions, then maybe you're asking the wrong type of question. Maybe you're using closed instead of open questions. And maybe you do, like you said, put your time investing into some kind of how to interview motivational listening and communication. And because it is a skill, isn't it? Like you say, we are educators, we're teachers. We're more that than manual therapists. That's what we need to be able to do, talk to people and open them up, and then they tell us what.
Oh, as much as is the point I was trying to make, that we are giving too much importance to some things and not enough to others. Yeah. Let's start switching a little bit our mind frame.
Definitely. Okay, let's have a little quick look in at the comments. And I have been looking at the comments. Every time I look over, I'm not ignoring you, Anna Marie. I'm just checking if there's anything which I really want to highlight. There's been some great comments in here, and I've kind of let you talk amongst yourselves because Anna was just coming out with some great stuff, so I didn't want to interrupt her. Let me just see if there's anything I want to put up there.
Some great comments, aren't they? Some
wonderful stuff, and some people who I'm looking for. So thank you for joining us. Oh, look at that. I'm just going to put that up because I love the word hug. I miss the hugs too. Feels wrong that I can't do it. I don't know who you are. That's beautiful. Yeah. People have been talking about the difference between, the power of touch. Oh, here we go. Let's put this up. This is important. Happy 20th birthday to Summer Benson tomorrow. Please send her best wishes as she's away from home.
Oh, tanti auguri, Summer. Tanti auguri. Tanti auguri. Happy birthday.
20, wow. So how old was she when I first met her then? She must have been 3 or something. That's incredible. Amazing. Congratulations, Gary. Another one of your children makes it past 15 years old. How? I don't know. But congratulations. Well done. You're doing something right. Right, people, it's 9:07. Thank you, Anne Maria, very much.
Oh, thank you very much for having me and listening to me waffling.
That's fine. I think, again, definitely it's going to be a case of, like Paul, having you back, maybe to focus in, to travel down that funnel into somewhere a little bit lower down, into particular, maybe about motivational, maybe about the way of talking. Maybe that would be something interesting if we get some feedback. So help us. How do we perform a better subjective analysis? What language should we use or not use? And maybe that would be.
We can do something quite specific for clinical applications of subjective, for sure.
Okay, Anna, I'm going to move you back down to the lobby. I'm not chucking you out. All those other times has not been me. I will come back. I will come back and thank you again in a couple of minutes. I'm just going to sign off here with people in the room. Okay, but
bye. Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll speak to you in a second, okay, Anna Marie? There we go. What a fantastic lady. There were so many words I wanted to say. Just say that again. Reaffirmation. I think that was one of them or something. It was like reaffirmation just came out like, yeah, amazing accent. But that's all part of communication. There's no coincidence that all the adverts, think of what adverts on TV are putting a northern accent to create trust and belief, and it's the man or woman next door. But then when it's something professional, like a dentist or a doctor, suddenly it's a southern accent, all posh. I mean, that's just a classic example of how the marketers know exactly how to play with our feelings by changing the tone. And that's something we need to be thinking about as well. When we are talking to our patients, how we come across the words we use. I'm not saying we should all start talking different accents, but it is a big factor. Right, what do I need to say? I've got an echo of myself. I don't know whether you can hear this echo. What's going on tonight? I do not know. Let me have a little look. Next week, Claire Minchell is with us next week. Claire Minchell, who some of you will probably know, probably one of the most current and best strength and conditioning researchers in the business at the moment, highly under demand. So it's fantastic she's coming in to have a chat with us. And she's going to be talking about, a bit linked with this, we've talked about the importance of individualizing with subjective assessment. What about when you're dishing out strength and conditioning? How do you manage to make sure you're individualizing there as well? How do you treat the person and not just the knee? So it's going to be kind of picking up from what we did this week, but with strength and conditioning. Dr. Claire Minchell will be in next week, same time, same place. Claire Minchell is also going to be one of the speakers at Lunch at Life Conference, which I'll just give a little plug to here as well. Remember, some people ask me, is there any discount for STA members? And there always has been, and there always will be. And there's no time thing on it either. It's not like, do it by next week. As STA members, you'll always have a 20% discount for anything I put on. And you just go and put in STA20, and that will give you 20% off any of the tickets up there. So that's out there if you want to. In case any of you, I know some of you there are coming along, it is still a physical conference. The only thing that's changed is the three international speakers. So Matt Fitzgerald, who I hope makes some of you just excited by the very name, he's going to be speaking virtually, as will be Kevin Maggs, because he's in America as well, and as will be, sadly, Anis Sanvito, who's a fantastic massage therapist, who I purely got along because of last year's comment after the conference, why didn't you have a massage therapist up there? So I wanted to get Alice along. I was going to fly her here to chat, but she will be on a big screen and they will be getting involved in all of the question time. So physical speakers like Tom Goom, Trevor Pryor, Ben Cormack, all of the national speakers, who else? Claire Minchell, I've mentioned, Emma Brockwell, Nick Knight, Mike James, all those people. They're going to still be there in person. So anyway, there you go. Right, so next week, Claire Minchell, thank you very much for joining us again. Read through the comments. I've seen Gary has been talking very much, putting things up there, which is great. Continue the conversation by using this feed. And if there's anything you particularly want Anna Maria to answer, I know she'll be happy to come back. So just leave something in the comment section. Is it just me listening to myself repeating everything? I've got a terrible echo. I'm going to ignore it. Right. Okay, people, thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you next Tuesday, 8 o'clock UK time. Thanks very much.
You're listening to the Sports Therapy Association podcast. Let's talk.